Hello and welcome to the History of Colonization podcast. My name is Fidelity and this is episode 19 of the podcast. Now, we are still in the early modern time period in the history of colonization, and there are many exploration voyages from this period, and we can't possibly cover all of them, but we'll cover one of them in this episode. We'll talk a bit about mapping in this episode, as well as the general attitudes of the colonizers towards the indigenous people they encountered. So, we begin in the year of 1524, on the voyage that was led by Giovanni da Verrazzano, a Florentine merchant who was sponsored by King Francis I of France. He travelled to the east coast of what is now the USA in 1524. And this was by no means the first exploration of North America. The Vikings went inland 5 centuries ago, and the Englishman John Cabot landed around Newfoundland in 1497, although the exact location is still debated. This particular voyage produced what scholars have called the first geographical and ethnological account along the North American coast, but we'll question the authority of this document in this episode. Before we go into details on the voyage itself, let's talk a bit about maps. Accurate cartography method for the early colonizers, the knowledge of other continents beyond Europe, as well as the accuracy in determining the routes through oceans and places that had already been colonized, was important in the race to find the best areas for economic exploitation for the colonizers. Cartographers at the time relied on the logbooks from voyagers, letters from the early colonizers, earlier manuscripts and maps, but they would also listen to sailors in taverns or get information that was picked up from conversations with others. Through synthesizing this information, a variety of maps were created and distributed amongst European scholars, merchants, and officials. But for our purposes, what we have to know is that a world map was published in 1507, the Waldseemüller world map. And it was the first time where the name America appears, and the two continents, North and South America, are depicted. The area between Europe and Asia had been shown as a vast sea for a long time. But with early journeys to the American coast, European cartographers were able to come up with a map that was displaying the continents more accurately than before. This is where the story begins, with the usual attempt to find a route to Asia through the Americas. But this time it wasn't the Spanish or the Portuguese who were trying to do so. This time it was led by Giovanni da Verrazzano, who was born into a family of rich bankers and merchants in Florence. Knowledge of Ferdinand Magellan's 1521 circumnavigation had been spreading throughout Europe. The first account of Magellan's expedition, the Moluccis and Sulis, also known as the Islands of the Moluccans, was published in 1523, and it was based on interviews with surviving crew members. Verrazzano had reportedly followed Magellan from Portugal to Spain in 1517, so Verrazzano would have been very much aware of the same kind of geographical knowledge that was available to Magellan at the time. But Verrazzano's voyage had already been planned for many months before the book was even published. So while Verrazzano was most likely aware of Magellan's journey to Asia, it did not change his plans. Verrazzano's aim differed. He was not interested in the Spice Islands, but he was looking towards China instead. Verrazzano was able to get sponsored by King Francis I of France, who was eager to find new trade routes to the Pacific Ocean in a bid to compete against the Spanish and the Portuguese. So in January 1524, Verrazzano left France. He made landfall at Cape Fear, in modern-day North Carolina. The ship first sailed south to Florida, but Verrazzano and his men decided that it was going too close to Spanish territory, and so they sailed back up north, along the coast of the states of Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, New York, and Rhode Island. They then stopped at Narragansett Bay before heading north past Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Maine, and Nova Scotia, and eventually went back to France from Newfoundland. Verrazzano would later go on another voyage in 1528 to Florida and the Bahamas, before being allegedly killed and eaten in Guadalupe. So that's a very quick summary of his voyages. The little details are not really my focus in this episode. Now if we compare the legacy of Verrazano's voyage with Magellan's voyage, Magellan too set out to find a western route to Asia, and he did so, although it involved going much further south than he expected. On the other hand, Verrazano did not find such a route. His voyage was mostly considered a failure by contemporaries, and he came back to obviously much less of a fanfare than Magellan. And although some historians have suggested that it was a success and an accomplishment in his documentation of the North American coast, the details of land and people were of no immediate benefit to his sponsors in France, and there were multiple inaccuracies with his descriptions of the geography and the people he met. The main source on the voyage is an 11-page letter written by Verrazano himself to King Francis I after completing his voyage. It's also known as the Salieri Codex. Scholars have sometimes treated this document as gospel without a more critical eye, since it is the only written account we have of early 16th century North America. And this is despite mapping inaccuracies, vague descriptions and timelines, and many times Verrazano wasn't even sure exactly where he was. Verrazano mistook a lagoon, or possibly an estuary near North Carolina, as the entrance into the Pacific Ocean, which would then lead to China and India. This was reflected in maps from 1527 onwards, up until the late 17th century, as a body of water that almost cuts the American continent into half. It's referred to as the Verrazano False Sea, Verrazanian Sea, or the False Pacific Ocean. The misinformation was in part due to the lack of subsequent expeditions, but it also perhaps reflected a need for Europeans to have some measure of hope in order to continue with their expeditions westwards, in order to find a faster way to Asia. There was none. Now, beyond descriptions of landscapes and navigation, what I found most interesting was the interactions with indigenous people, as described by Verrazano. There is always a patronizing, exoticizing tone in most of these colonial accounts, and so obviously the descriptions are not entirely reliable. Here I'm going to quote some of the descriptions of indigenous people from the Salieri Codex. Near Newport, Rhode Island, Verrazano wrote, quote, "They are very generous and give away all they have. We made great friends with them, and one day before we entered the harbour of the ship, when we were lying at anchor 1 league out to sea because of unfavourable weather, they came out to the ship with a great number of their boats. They had painted and decorated their faces with various colours, showing us that it was a sign of happiness. They brought us some of their food and showed us by signs where we should anchor in the port for the ship's safety, and then accompanied us all the way until we dropped anchor." Unquote. Now here's another description of indigenous people around the coast of South Maine. Quote, "The people were quite different from the others, for while the previous ones had been courteous in manner, these were full of crudity and vices, and were so barbarous that we could never make any communication with them. We found no courtesy in them, and when we had nothing more to exchange and left them, the men made all the signs of scorn and shame that any brute creature would make." Unquote. Now clearly there is a distinction between the types of indigenous people that Verrazano was writing about. There's this binary between cooperative, friendly indigenous people versus the antagonistic, supposedly barbaric savages further up north. We often see this very simplistic way of understanding indigenous people in relation to how they welcomed the Europeans in colonial accounts, and there is always this need to categorize them as beneficial or disadvantageous to the colonial expedition. But some scholars have also suggested that indigenous people did grow more hostile towards Europeans with more contact. Yet this theory is debatable, since some indigenous people actually became friendlier on future contact with Europeans. So perhaps there was no direct correlation between animosity and time at all. Perhaps the indigenous people were actually more complex than that. And their reaction to the Europeans depended on their individual traditions, cultures, and practices. As a side note, the kidnapping of indigenous people was also the norm in early colonial expeditions. Verrazano describes the kidnapping of an 8-year-old boy with no shame. Quote, "We took the boy from the old woman to carry back to France, and we wanted to take the young woman, who was very beautiful and tall. But it was impossible to take her to the sea because of the loud cries," she uttered. "And as we were a long way from the ship and had to pass through several woods, we decided to leave her behind and took only the boy." Unquote. And so to conclude this shorter than usual episode, I guess this also leads to the question of how we interpret historical sources. How is the Salieri Codex still useful if there are so many inaccuracies in its description and such condescending attitudes towards indigenous people? Well, we can't fully rely on one written source, of course. We have to combine it with, for example, archaeological findings in order to verify these written observations. But even if we cannot ascertain the accuracy and truthfulness of the narrator, documents like these from the early colonial period reveal much more about their worldview, their values, their perspectives, through what they mention and what they choose to leave out. So we've come to the proper end of the episode. Thank you for listening, and if you want to read the Salieri Codex for yourself, or if you just want to know more about the voyage in particular, do go onto my blog at hocpodcast.wordpress.com. Stay safe, and I'll see you in the next episode.